You're listening to an Irreverent podcast. Visit irreverent.fm for more content from my friends.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Bad Words, an evangelical podcast where we give toxic theology the read that it deserves by taking another look at some of the books that have been given major influence in evangelical Christianity. This season, we are reading Wild at Heart by John Eldridge and Captivating by John and Stacey Eldridge, losing the plot on manhood and womanhood one chapter at a time. I am your host, Janice Legata, and I'll be ripping up this week's chapter with a good member of the Bad Book Club. Co-host, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Chelsea Long. My pronouns are she, her, and lately I have been identifying as a lay theologian, meaning I am interested in studying theology, but not interested in going to seminary. And I'm a meditation teacher. I am also identifying as post-evangelical. And so I'm like retaining Christian identity, identifying more like mystic Christian, which is kind of like, you know, universal truth with Jesus going on in there. So that's me. I'm a mom and I'm a writer trying to become an author. So that's me.
Excellent. So we'll get started with the reading of the opening paragraph. We'll have a discussion and then hear the closing paragraph and send you on your way. For additional context and conversation and the option to listen to these episodes with no ads, I invite you to join the people of Jod by becoming a Jodly or Jod-willing patron on Patreon. But either way, I'm happy you're here and I hope you're ready, because without further ado, let's get into
Captivating, Chapter 12. The story of Cinderella turns upon an invitation. Up until the moment that the courier from the palace arrives at her door, Cinderella's life seems set in stone. She will always be a washerwoman, a cellar girl. Her enemies will forever have the upper hand. She will live a life of enduring disappointments, though she will suffer them nobly. No other life seems possible. This is her fate. Then, word from the prince arrives, an invitation to a ball. It is at this point that all hell breaks loose. Her longings are awakened, her enemies become enraged, and her life is never the same.
John and Stacy have a lot of ideas. So you are a woman. Would you qualify according to the Eldridges? Do you think?
I mean, I am beautiful, so I feel like that was one of the main, I have thin privilege, so according to them, yes, I am. So yeah, I'm going to say I'm a woman, and I have so much to offer to the world, and I'm a mother. The thing about me that's so confusing is that is really confusing for me, and why I'm like writing a whole book about it is, I really did everything right, according to like the conservative evangelical worldview. You know, I'm white, I'm straight, I'm cisgender, married a good Christian boy, had kids young. And so it felt very confusing when I finally reached the point of like, oh, yeah, this is not working for me. And then I've had so many of my friends of color be like, yeah, welcome to the world. And my LGBTQ friends, like, it took you a while to get this, but okay, now you're here. And I'm like really thankful for their grace, because I'm like, oh, I mean, though, besides the fact that I'm a woman, the world that I grew up in was like created for my comfort. And I enjoyed that comfort. Up until the point where I experienced birth trauma and all of these things started kind of going wrong. And I'm like, wait, this isn't how it was supposed to go. Like my life, this was supposed to be happily ever after. I did all the things, you know?
Right.
And actually the book, there's one quote in this chapter where she talks about like, if Jesus is calling you into something, essentially like it's going to work out. You're going to be like under his covering of protection. And if you're not, you're going to be hurt. And that kind of like prosperity gospel that is like so baked into that worldview, that's exactly what I experienced, was like, what have I done wrong for this bad thing to happen to me? And then kind of having to unwind that, like that theology actually doesn't work with for real people with like real problems. So,
right.
Yeah.
Lay theologian, you are preaching already. So,
Got a lot to say.
All All right, so Captivating by John and Stacey Eldridge. When did you first become aware of this book? Yeah, and had you read it before? And if so, when, where, why? When, where, why, how with this book?
Do you know what year this book was published?
2005.
Okay.
Because Wild at Heart was 2001. Yeah.
Okay, so I honestly can't remember if I read it, but it's like pretty likely that I would have, because in 2005, I was a senior in high school and, you know, just like very much in that world. So I'm going to say I probably read it, but I don't have a strong memory of it, but definitely a strong awareness of the John and Stacey Eldridge aura, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my husband definitely read Wild at Heart and like all of those kind of man books. So it's kind of nice. Like we kind of have this like understanding because we both grew up in the same culture, just like him as a man and me as a woman. So there's a lot of shorthand that we have to unpack, you know?
Okay. So then how did you feel about the prospect of reading it when I sprung this on you?
I mean, I willfully volunteered for this opportunity. So, I think it's like a thing that a lot of us are doing now is kind of going back to these books that maybe we didn't question at the time that we were reading them. And now, I mean, for me, like not necessarily Captivating, but for example, someone like Mark Driscoll, like I used to love listening to Mark Driscoll's podcasts and like, I didn't question them. Do you know what I mean? But now when if I would go back or like, you know, they would play clips when I The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill or whatever, I was like, oh my gosh, like how did I not question that? So I was kind of curious to see how much, you know, like how does this hold up? How much of this can I like put myself back in like evangelical me and then compare it to now? So.
All right. So what chapter did you have and what was it about?
Yeah. So I went in cold. I downloaded the audiobook on Hoopla. So I listened to the chapter, which was read by the authors. I'm assuming it was a man and a woman. And I didn't know that it was the last chapter before. I literally just like started listening to it. And then I got the vibe that it was the last chapter. And so I'm listening and like bookmarking spots that I want to come back to. And it's literally not even 1 minute into the chapter. And I'm already like problematic, problematic. Like, so, you know, it was good. I definitely wrote down some choice quotes because I was like, I can't believe I'm literally not even a minute into this thing. And I'm already like, I take issue.
All right. So we're going to be comparing and contrasting this with the Barbie movie. So do you want to give some thoughts on Captivating first, or do you want to talk about Barbie first and then do them both at the same time? Dealer's latest
yeah,
choice.
I think, I know, let's, I think let's talk about the book a little bit. Right. I want to know, because like you have read the whole book. And so this is kind of, you know, like the culmination. So I'm sure there are things that like, honestly, it made me kind of want to go. I mean, good for them. It made me kind of want to go back and like, listen to more of it. I did not. But I was like, I don't understand how you are reaching these conclusions. And it would be helpful to understand what all you talked about. Because, like, I really don't. I mean, I can guess, you know what I mean? But the first minute of the audiobook, they said, as a woman, you don't need to strive or arrange. You don't need to make it happen. You only need to respond. So that was the very early on in the chapter. And I was like, Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that is coming from. So the chapter opens with this their version telling of the Cinderella story, and how about we are all basically all of our lives hinge on this invitation we've been given to be women, and I mean this they love a fictional story. They love a movie to make their points, get their points across. Mm-hmm. I've taken issue with the whole book, but I took issue specifically with their telling of Cinderella here. Cause I was like, the note that I wrote, so I was like, oh, so according to them, you just need to wait around for an unlikely invitation, right? Cause Cinderella was not supposed to get this invitation. She didn't get this invitation. Like, she was specifically not invited to this ball. Like, her life didn't turn on this invitation. It turned on her decision to pursue this invitation that she was not given, like to go to this ball that she was not supposed to go to. So then I'm upset.
She made it happen for herself. Right. Yeah, they're misrepresenting Cinderella.
Right. And I'm like, how am I? I'm getting worked up and mad over a fictional story. Like, they say it's a beautiful parable. And I said, no, it's not. This is a fictional fairy tale. And I can't believe I have to fight you guys over fiction. Like, this isn't... This isn't the Bible. Like, you would think that's what we would be arguing over, but it's not.
Gosh.
And so then directly after that, like, they bring Mary into it. And then I was like, ooh, like, rereading it this morning, I was like, oh, Chelsea loves Mary. Like, so
I'm really
excited to hear, like, your your feelings.
I mean,
on
they
handling
invoked
of that.
A lot of names. Yes, they invoked a lot of names. And I was like, yeah, we just have such different takes on what is happening here. So I guess, like, in general, you know, I just kept feeling like, and this is kind of what they do, right? This whole culture, it's like they come at something with such a strong bias. And this is like how I know how much I've changed, because I can see like things that I wouldn't have questioned before, because I was like so entrenched in that way of thinking too. So you just kind of like, it's just self-reinforcing, right? And so I definitely had so many moments like that while I was reading. And I was mad when they had Mary's name in their mouth, because I'm just like, y'all didn't even know about Mary. But like, there were so many examples in this book, and it's such a, it was such a contradiction, but like they can't see it. So for example, I feel like they're constantly saying in this chapter, like, women can exist like in all realms, like wherever God has called them to. And then they continually give these examples where women are like quitting roles of leadership or like giving up career opportunities. Like, and one of my like bones to pick with the culture in general, just because of where it intersects with my own personal story, is like the supremacy of the role of motherhood over any other role that a woman could play. It's like in the evangelical imagination, we don't have an imagination for women outside of like how they can serve the family. And then the weird, like, Jesus is my lover stuff in this book, where there was one where I was like, I literally don't understand what you're saying. They were talking about a woman named Tammy who was in church leadership. Mm-hmm. And Jesus called her to quit church leadership, and no one understood her decision. And Jesus asked her, quote, to become a woman of one thing, to become a Mary, a woman devoted to worship, to minister to the heart of God, following Jesus' lead into the secret realm of his heart. And I honestly do not know what they are talking about. What is Tammy doing? Is she becoming a nun? I literally don't understand what they're talking about. To minister to the heart of God. They kept talking about that. I'm like, is she just sitting at home praying? I don't understand. They didn't explain it.
They didn't, but that's what it sounded like. It sounds like this woman just quit everything to go sit home every day
and pray? Sing worship songs?
Worship and pray?
And what does minister to the heart of God mean?
And this is right, some of that Christianese that we just heard and was like, yeah, okay. And then it's not until someone from the outside, or until you get outside, and they're like, what does that mean? And you're like,
I have no idea.
I don't actually know. I don't know.
Like, I'm not against that. Sometimes, some days I'm like, I think I missed my calling to be a nun. But like, I literally don't know what that phrase means. So like, that was one example of like, they love telling stories about women like renouncing their agency. Or like, it's like this twisted version of claiming agency by renouncing their roles in the world, other than like loving God and serving their family. Cause there was like another lady, I think Carol, the sky was the limit for Carol, according to John. And she decided to stay at home full time with her newborn son.
Right.
And there was nothing on earth that Carol would rather do. Yet it was an incredibly difficult decision to make because her family doesn't understand and she has hopes and desires and she's given up so much of her own life to bring life to her little boy. God called Carol, this is a quote by the way, to the high position of mothering, and she is choosing to die 1,000 small deaths to herself every single day. God is meeting her there as she is playing the most irreplaceable, essential role imaginable, the hidden life of the stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they have this whole section with all these different women. And the ways they have given up, whatever. And like in that Carol story, like the first sentence, our dear friend Carol has a bright mind and a keen intellect. I was like, isn't that the same thing? Like, you can't think of anything else. Our friend Carol is smart and also intelligent. It's like, what is happening here?
We want you to know that she's smart.
But like with her, and then like with Tammy, this book is so full of contradictions because, especially with Tammy's story, you know, she just went away and nobody understood it, not even her church friends, whatever. She just went away to become a worshiper. And then a page later, you know, your place in the world as God's heart for relationship is vital. All the enemy has to do to destroy people's lives is get them isolated. I was like, you mean like Tammy?
Like Tammy? Like Carol?
Right.
No, sorry. She has her baby with her. She's fine.
Her sweet little boy. And then I wonder, would it be as important if this had been a little girl? Because, yeah, this book, first of all, this idea of an irreplaceable role, it's never your own thing. Like, you women only have an irreplaceable role in someone else's story. It's not your story. You are
right.
The helper, right? The one to come alongside someone else, whether some man, whether that's Jesus or your husband. But it's not your story. It's not yours. So it could be Jesus, it could be your husband, or your son in this case, your little boy.
Or possibly your pastor, your male pastor. And I think this is something that bothers me a lot, that you see super strongly in evangelical Christian culture, but you also see it reinforced, like just in our culture, is just this irreplaceableness of a mother's role and the fact that motherhood should supersede any other desire, any other, you know, whatever it is, like any other thing that you want to do at your career, any other relationship, any other ambition. And women are demonized in so many ways if they don't at least pay lip service to that. So that definitely stood out to me. Like, I was recently, you know, I've been watching a lot of World Cup, and I was recently listening to a podcast with Alex Morgan, who is this like incredible soccer star, and she has a 2 or 3 year old daughter. And one of the podcasts, they were introducing her, you know, like all of her accolades that she's won. And then they said, and most importantly, mother to her daughter, Charlie. And I think people just say that and they don't really, It's such a reinforced script. And like, if they really step back to think about it, it's like, really? Is the fact that she's her daughter's mother the most important thing about her? Like, I don't know. And you would never say that about like Pele. I don't know. What's a male soccer player? Like David Beckham. Is the most important thing about those guys the fact that they're the father of their kids? I've never heard anyone say that. Is that the most important thing about LeBron James? That he's the father to his kids? Has anyone ever said that about him?
Not to my knowledge.
We don't share similar stories with men athletes as fathers. Like, it's just the emphasis is not there. So there's so many ways. And I think for me, it was, you know, the religious indoctrination or conditioning, which is really baffling to me because it's not actually what was modeled in my home. But then I see it in something like this, and I'm like, yeah, it's not crazy that I picked this up from the culture, even if I came from a household where, like, both of my parents worked, you know what I mean? And it was like, really equitable, honestly, in terms of childcare and domestic labor. But, like, still, I grew up feeling like I'm going to be a wife and a mother, and that's going to be the thing that I'm going to do. And now looking back, I'm like, it feels so confusing because I think it's easy to gaslight yourself. And I have four sisters, and none of them felt that way. But I don't know why I did. I think it's like this weird cultural osmosis. And then I still think it's reinforced in culture, even outside of like conservative, you know, circles.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What did you think of, so it opens with Cinderella, they talk about Mary for a minute. And then like they're really... they play fast and loose with who's speaking and, you know, whether or not they introduce themselves. So you assume Stacy is writing this and having read, I'm like, this is not, John wrote this book and then just inserted Stacy sometimes. But there's this one part, yes, right after it talks about the power of a woman's life. And then it says, and it's John, but you don't know that at first. And then you have to go back and reread and you're like, oh, he stepped in here.
Okay, John.
I wanted to say nearly every great move, because they're talking about, yeah, women in history. I wanted to say nearly every great move, not wanting to overstate a crucial point and recognizing that there are moments when men have led the way. But Stacy chimed in and said, those men had mothers, didn't they? So like this book, the whole time, like this book just underplays the role of women just in the world and in history and whatever. There's a part in one of the earlier chapters where they talk about, no, men are crucial. Cause like, it wasn't women who stopped the Nazis, and it wasn't women who, you know, they go on to list these several things. It also wasn't women who started those things. So I don't know, you know, whatever. But like just this idea, you know, John is so loath to give women credit. Like, I don't want to overstate. How could you overstate it? Like, who's going to get mad? Like, women weren't there. They had nothing to do with it. So then here's that, you know, well, they had mothers, didn't they? And it's like that.
Let's blame Hitler's mom. Yeah, let's do that.
John would in a heartbeat, I promise you. He would have no problem.
Hitler's mom under the bus in a second. So bad. Like, it's so confusing, honestly, because I feel like their tone is like, women are so valuable. Women can do anything that God calls them to, specifically Jesus calls them to. But then at the same time, in the very same breath, it's like, this is woman's role. And women should quit all of their leadership roles to, like, serve the heart of the Lord and their family. And your family needs you to be the keeper of relationships. And that's why the enemy hates you so much, because the enemy is afraid of love, and we need women to cultivate. Oh, that whole section, let me find it. Oh. I mean, I, it's so hard. Like, there's just so much to take issue with. It talks about, that the enemy has a special hatred for Eve. Mm-hmm. Because God gave women this role of like making relationships a priority. And they say like men aren't going to care about relationships.
Right.
Men can go years without checking in on their relationships, but women have to make relationships center stage. You might at times feel like the only one who cares, but as a woman, you must hang on to this. Oh, and then it says, because of the Trinity, relationship is the most important thing in the universe. Do not give way or yield your intuitive sense of the importance of relationship for anything. You are irreplaceable to the people in your life. There are many things that God calls us to do, but loving well always comes first. Yeah. There's just so much there. The way that it completely just like lets men off the hook for caring.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like it just does not make sense. So in evangelicalism, I'm like, no, I was taught that God created humanity in general because God wanted a relationship, right? Like God was seeking relationship. And yes, because God created out of love because of the Trinity, and God exists in relationship and could only create in relationship. But I'm like, but now you're basically telling me that God created man. And it was good, but also somehow he left out this crucial piece. So he created wanting relationship, and then the first thing he created doesn't want relationship? Doesn't, and then he's like, oops, let me create this little upgrade, like this little toggle that will do the relationship.
Right. And like, as I was reading this or listening to this, I'm thinking, they're completely making this up. Like, this is not biblical in any way, shape, or form. I am reading this other book right now about the role of women in the early church in leadership, and the whole first section of the book, it's called Tell Her Story by Nijay Gupta. And it's a newer book. But the whole first part of the book, he goes through the creation narrative. And he like separates out the Genesis 1 creation narrative from like what happens in Genesis 3, and is it, you know, and that is one thing that I was never taught explicitly, was that there's like two creation narratives. And mm-hmm. And so anyway, I'm not going to go into all of it, but basically like the conclusion that he comes to in that book from the Genesis 1 narrative is that there's literally no distinction in the roles between Adam and Eve. And so when I was, and then he, you know, we can talk about like the curse and whatever, which they do in this chapter, for men to like want dominion over women or whatever. But like in this book, they say, of course they use the word Ezer, right? It's the Hebrew right. word that is translated here as help meet, right? Helper. Where in other, you know, parts of scripture, it's used to refer to God. And so there's actually like no biblical basis for Eve being created as Adam's helper. So I was like, again, take that word out of your mouth. But like they say, like they literally just made it up. They said like in that same paragraph, you know, Eve was created to make relationships a priority, and Adam was created to be God's warrior. And I'm like, where is this? Like, this is not coming from the Bible.
Right.
This is just coming from your cultural lens. And then you, like, somehow, with, like, wordsmithery, try to make this sound like this beautiful thing for women, you know, when really you're just making stuff up to justify, like, why women are subservient to men.
Right. Right.
And then throwing a Hebrew word on top of it.
Right, because then he's like, okay, if again God messed up because you did all this because you want a relationship, and then you created this dum-dum who doesn't know how to do it, but then also if you created him to be a warrior, against what? Because things were supposed to
be the enemy.
Right, but things were supposed to be fine. Like the enemy was never supposed to, right? Like, because stuff wasn't supposed to happen. It was supposed to be all good. So what was he going to be warring against? Had things gone according to the plan. Like,
right, because it was all peace and harmony in the garden.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, I guess God is omniscient, so God would have known that they were going to, the fall was going to happen, right? So I guess God had the foresight to create a warrior for that case.
But
which obviously, like, I take a lot of issue with this like Genesis narrative too. And actually we can get into that when we start talking about Barbie, because my little pet theory is that Barbie is like a feminist retelling of the Genesis narratives of creation and the fall. So, but yeah, I mean, I really take issue with the whole narrative that says, you know, God basically set them up to fail, because if God is omniscient, and then God knew that human nature was going to cause Eve and Adam to like want the thing that they can't have, you know, the tree with the knowledge of good and evil, then that kind of is a bad look for God, you know?
Yeah. So do you want to say anything else here, or do you want to jump to Barbie? And then
I think let's just say one more thing that I just died inside over was like towards the very end, they were talking about their friends who, I don't really remember the context, but they were like talking to their friends. And then, the wife is like, yeah, we have a family motto. And the husband was like, we do. And she was like, yeah, it's been on our fridge for 30 years. And then they say this stuff that's so incredibly messed up. And I think because I was listening to it, it was just like their tone, you know, it's just this tone of like, and this is what she lived by and invited people into. And I'm like, well, I feel like she didn't invite her husband very well into that, because he didn't even know that the motto was on the fridge for 30 years.
Right.
So it's just like this weird juxtaposition of like, look how beautiful it is, this role that you get to play. But like at every turn, it's men just treating women like shit, like they don't matter. And like what they do doesn't matter. It's super depressing.
Your irreplaceable role is putting this motto on the fridge for 30 years.
That your husband
didn't read. He did see, only for him to be told about it in this one moment. Like, so it took 30 years. And this is a work of fiction full of fiction. Like, ridiculous. But like,
Tammy ministering to Jesus' heart is not fiction. That really happened.
It's still happening to this day. We don't...
She's there.
We don't know where. We don't know what it is exactly that she's doing, but we know she's there doing it. Irreplaceably. Because no one else could do that for Jesus but Tammy.
No one else could. Tammy, what are you doing, Tammy? I feel like they're trying to conjure, honestly, they're trying to conjure the image, I think, of, like, Mary, you know, like, anointing Jesus' feet with oil, maybe? I don't know if they talk about that earlier in the book, but I would not be surprised if they, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they love that story, because they love to shit on Martha, right? She's doing too much. She's doing too much. And all Mary wanted, all Jesus needed, was for her to just sit at his feet and be enthralled.
Never mind that women were seen as property in those times, and Martha was literally just doing the thing that she was supposed to be doing.
Right.
According to the culture. I've always hated that story, because I don't like, it seems like Jesus has no empathy for Martha in that situation of literally just like, well, someone has to make dinner, and like, no men are going to do it. You're not doing it, Jesus.
Yeah, that's one of those stories that needs a second look, and needs, like, I would love, and it's impossible, but I wish I could like approach the Bible with no prior knowledge, not having these scripts already ingrained. But it's impossible.
It's so hard. Yeah. I actually I've been ideating around this series I want to do on my Instagram page around like how to read the Bible, like for people who want to, because that's been a lot of my own just personal work over probably the last six to eight years is literally trying to change the lens through which I see the Bible. And just doing, I mean, honestly, I took a really long time of not cracking the spine of the Bible, because I was like, I know that all I can see is like the toxicity that was fed to me. Even if it's by well-meaning people, like, I think something that's hard for me is like holding space for like no one in my life was trying to harm me. People, I think, actually had really good intentions for me, and I experienced it as good. But now, like, the things that I can't unsee. So I have done a ton of reading, like reading really broadly about the Bible, about different perspectives, you know, womanism, liberation theology, you know, from Jewish perspective, like you name it, you know. And it's been really helpful for me to be able to approach the Bible on my own terms. And like really, I can like still notice the things that I was taught to see. And then I can almost like compartmentalize those and then try to look at what's actually there. And I find it to be really helpful as someone who still values like the Christian tradition. And I also understand that like for so many people, they're like, nah, I'm done. And that's great. But I think who I'm trying to talk to is people who are like, I actually didn't want to lose this, but I don't know how to get it back in a way that doesn't feel harmful to me. So anyway, I need to do that story, because I think going back to these scriptures, you know, with like a different lens it's super healing for me, you know, and also to just trust in like the authority of my own thoughts, opinions, and, you know, what interpretation of the text. So,
yeah. And just off the top of my head and just thinking about Martha and Jesus right now, I'm like, well, maybe Jesus, well, two options. Maybe Jesus was being an asshole because Jesus wasn't perfect and did make mistakes and get things wrong. Or maybe he was being super, super empathetic and was coming at it from the angle of, no, just come and sit down. Like, you don't have to do this. Yes, this is the expectation, but you don't have to. And if these dudes want to eat, then they can figure it out. It's like I'm Jesus, and I'm so different that you don't have to treat me the way you think you do. Like, you can just come and chill, because, yeah, the expectation is, oh, we came over, so this woman has to feed us, and you don't have to do that with me. Like,
totally. I love that, and maybe that was his tone. Like, I think that story has always just come off like really shaming of women. And the fact that they like invoke it here makes me so mad, because it's like, you're literally telling us the roles that we should play, and then you're shaming us for playing those roles. And you're like showing us how much men undervalue these roles. So it's absolutely infuriating.
Right.
And then it's all packaged up in this like tone of like, this is just like the most amazing thing, and you're like, you're literally teaching women to be treated like shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was a section that made me so mad that, and maybe this is like, you know, we can move on to the Barbie stuff, but like they were talking about this whole idea of like headship and covering, and like there's this one part that was like, don't let the world shape you into their view of what a woman is, you'll end up a man. They literally said that, and what you have to offer is, as a woman, uniquely feminine. Oh, and then this is the line that I alluded to in the beginning: above all, you must live in the world as a response to the invitation of Jesus, for you will be hurt if he has not called you there, you will be covered if he has. And this whole idea of like, they're like, no, this submission stuff is like not to harm or control women. It's to protect women so that you can be like under God's covering, and it sets you free to be controlled. It's, and then they say something like, it's just weird, because they like almost get there and then they're like, nah, like they were like, and if you're not in a system that is doing this like in a healthy way, that's not exactly what they said, but basically like I almost felt like they were trying to allude, like, we're not saying you should stay like in an abusive situation, but like, I don't like, what are women supposed to do? Like, women are supposed to be totally dependent. And then you're like, yeah, but if this is not a healthy situation, like, you need to get out of it and Jesus will show you the way, something like that. And I'm just like, Right. Exactly how are they supposed to do that?
Right. But even that part, right? You will be hurt if he has not called you there. You will be covered if he has. Like, this is that dangerous prosperity gospel. You'll be hurt if he has not called you there. So, like you with your birth trauma story, it's like you were hurt. Did Jesus not call you there? Because if you were doing the right thing, you would have been covered and you would have been fine. So it's just that, if you get hurt, that's on you. You were not.
It's very victim shaming. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously I don't see my birth trauma in the same category as like being in an abusive relationship, but I think like, you know, it is such a victim shaming and like guilt inducing mentality of like, what did I do wrong to deserve this?
Right.
Which is right. How I felt. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is not how this was supposed to go.
Right. And it's just
I must have failed in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I'm out of line. I'm doing the wrong thing. Something I did brought this onto me. And now I got to figure that out. But all of this back and forth, I'm like, oh, like this leads right to that monologue that is being quoted so much from the Barbie movie, right? Like, it's just impossible to be a woman and get it right. Like, there's just no way. So, Barbie.
Yeah. So I think what the book has in common with the Barbie movie is just like a discussion of the roles that women play or should play. And I feel like this book is a perfect example of setting a woman up for failure, because it feels like no matter what, she loses, you know? And that's essentially like the heart of that speech that America Ferrera gave in the movie.
So I haven't talked to you since you've seen the Barbie movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What did you think? What were your expectations? And then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Yeah, so I think my expectations were too high. Like, when I first saw the trailers, I didn't really get it. And then I was like, I don't think I'm going to go see this. I'm honestly not a huge movie or TV person. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to see this. But then everyone started seeing it, and there was, like, tons of great think pieces and, you know, quotable quotes. And then this kind of like FOMO kicked in where I was like, I feel like I gotta, it's like a cultural moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm always kind of down for like a good pop culture, like theological mashup moment. And as a content creator, I really can't resist. So trying to like capitalize on the bandwagon of it all. So I went to see it, but I do think I kind of had it like more hyped up in my mind. And I liked it. I don't think I would see it again. It felt way too long. There were some parts that I was like literally bored. And also I like, you know, I was down with it, and there was a lot of super funny parts, like laugh out loud funny for me. So I really enjoyed it. I think probably one of my favorite things about it was the like kind of darkly funny parts. And this is like where I got into the Genesis like correlations was, you know, like this very Christian mindset of Eve being made for Adam. And like, even throughout this book, it's like a woman ceases to exist outside of like her orientation to a man, whether that's Jesus or her husband or her father or her male pastor or whatever. And so I thought that was it was very early in the movie when like, you know, they're doing all the like, hi Barbie. And then, it's like every day is a great day for Barbie, but like not for Ken unless Barbie acknowledges him. And I just was like, oh, this is like so dark, but like so funny because it's so real, You know what I mean? And like the other part that I laughed out loud was when Gloria and what was the daughter's name? Come to the Barbie world. Oh my gosh. Sasha. Was that her name?
Yeah.
The daughter. Yeah. Yeah. When they come to Barbie land and it's like where all the Barbie houses are. And, she's like, Sasha is like, oh, you guys all live here. Like, this is so cool. And she's like, yeah, we all have our own houses. And then she's like, well, where do the Kens live? And Barbie's like, I don't know. And just like the fact that it was so pitch perfect, you know, like they don't, like she never considers Ken. Like she never thinks that Ken has anything valuable to like contribute. It's just kind of like if she needs something from him, she knows he's just like waiting at her beck and call. I just found that to be like so darkly funny. Perfect. Perfect. It's like he ceases to exist if she's not thinking about him.
So conservative men are all up in arms.
Because very, that feels very shitty. Hello.
It's like who knew? Just a whole set of people just being diminished, just not thought of. And it's so weird. I saw a TikTok this morning, but basically talking about we don't understand, like, you know, all the old comedy bits, all the old sitcoms, right, whatever, like all of these tropes of, you know, the ball and chain and the nagging wife and, you know, men feeling so put upon by like marriage, right, and having to deal with this woman for the rest of my life. And now when women are like, oh, actually, there are other options and I don't necessarily want to be married. Now men are like losing their minds and like can't understand it. So now that we don't want it either and have the freedom to choose other things, like they're doing all of these things to like shut that down. It's like, how can we put women back in the box, and, right?
Like, exactly. Entrap women so that they have to be dependent on men.
And it's awful because they're not saying, oh, damn, the men who came before us didn't do great. And this is where women are now. How can we change to make this more palatable? Like, how can we become better so that this is something we all enjoy? And they're like, no. How can we just get them back? We realize now that they were always unhappy.
Well, Janice, it's because God didn't create men to value relationships. So that's not their fault. They just can't see it.
So right? Even with that, okay, they can't see it, right? Like they can't. God didn't put that part in their brain. That's not their fault. So we are the toggle, right? We're here to create that. So we're telling you, because women aren't saying we just don't want relationship anymore. Women are saying I don't want relationship at this cost. Like if it's like this, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. But here's how it could be. Here's how this could be good for both of us. Mm-hmm. We're the toggle. We have the answer. We know. But men, and maybe also, right, maybe that's the warrior piece where they're just going to fight this to the death and say, no, we don't want it. It has to be how? Because, yeah, I don't know. You can't say women were created for a relationship to show men how to do relationship. And then also say that women don't get to show men. You don't get to tell
how they want to be in a relationship. Like, what would be a good way to be in a relationship? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, regarding all these hot takes from like conservative men, it's like that cliche quote, right? Like, equality feels like oppression to those who have had, you know, more rights. And so it's like fascinating that there's this lack of empathy of being like, oh, this actually like feels really bad to see men portrayed in this way and men diminished in this way. there's zero ability for them to turn around and be, and like have any introspection of like what women are trying to say here, you know?
Yeah. Like some days it's like, is it even possible to get past this? I don't know. And then, I mean, it's not impossible because there's not all men, like literally there are good men out there. Right. And there are men who loved Barbie and got it and were fine mm-hmm. with it. But it is also very much like that other saying, right? Hit dogs will holler. And it's like, you guys, we're all watching the same thing, but we're seeing things very differently. And also it's that piece where men just don't know, can't acknowledge being wrong. Like, again, it's with patriarchy, it's with anti-blackness, it's with just all these things where like there is this want to say, I'm not responsible for what happened before, but also at the mm-hmm. same time not wanting to like give it a full throated condemnation. Like if you don't want to be held responsible for slavery, if you don't want to be held responsible for misogyny and the worst parts of patriarchy, why do you have such a hard time saying that was bad? That was not the way to do it. It's nothing to do with me. It's not me. I'm doing
great. Right. Like no one's going to punish you. You're going to be fine. You've always been fine, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's like kind of going back to my experience of like kind of waking up in my life to like the system, you know, like the way in which white evangelicalism was literally created as out of systems of oppression and to continue to enable systems of oppression. And, you know, when you are in that world that was built for you, especially as a white male, there's so much incentive to not see anything else because you have so much to lose. You know, you feel that you have so much to lose if you start to see those things. And I honestly feel like my experience of like hearing from my Black friends and whatever, my like queer friends, the ways in which they experienced depression when I was just comfortable in my life for the first 25 years of my life has helped me actually have a lot of empathy for men, for white men, because I'm like, you just don't see it. And it's hella frustrating, right? Like, I want to shake them just as I'm sure like my friends have wanted to shake me in the past with like my ignorant comments or the, you know, just the ways that I like just don't see it, you know? But I guess that's like, you know, why we're building this coalition of like everyone else who's like, all right, this is not working for us. So like we at some point, the tipping point is going to be like, it's only working for white men and like it's not working for everyone else. So like at some point, isn't it going to like finally tip over and like it's finally going to change? Like that's the only hope I have. You know what I mean? Is like we got to all freaking band together because it's insane. But the hard thing is so many of the systems are so longstanding that the power is still there. I mean, and you see it like in our government, you see it in like Roe v. Wade being overturned and affirmative action being undone, like all of these things, like they're fighting hard to keep that and they have the power. I mean, I do get discouraged, like, and then I just try to like kind of keep my head down in like my little sphere. Like, what can I do? Because otherwise I get super overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. Those men are warriors using their warring power to do not the right things. And it is just a constant wonder for better and worse, to be alive at this time and just watching all of these systems fail spectacularly and like clearly, but then also watching, yeah, white men, and not just white, like all of us are complicit, all of us are helping in some way, because all of our comfort, right, is tied up in this, and as awful as things are, the devil that you know, right, it's better than whatever else is out there. So we're all, you know, this is why coalition building is so hard, because we have to deal with our own intersections in the place where, okay, the system's not working and it's not good for me, but also I do have a job and I'm doing okay, and I like constant internet access, and I know Amazon treats its employees terribly. That 2-day shipping though, I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's heavy, you know, it's really heavy. And I think particularly when it comes to, you know, the white evangelical church, which feels so outsized in its influence. But when you look at the numbers of like the percentage of Americans that are in that church, I think recently I heard it's like 17%. So it's a minority of people, right? Which is like where a lot of their fear comes from, because they see the ways in which they treated minorities and they don't like that.
Right.
So they're like struggling to maintain their power. But I have felt for a really long time that, I mean, this is like throwback, but remember when like Jen Hatmaker came out as like queer affirming? Mm-hmm. I don't remember what year that was, but maybe 2016, so a while back. And she just got like burned at the stake, you know? I remember reflecting on that and just thinking like the people, like the gatekeepers of the church are going to literally gatekeep the church to death. And then, you know, 4 years later, you know, it's 2020 and we're all the impacts of Trump and like all of that, which I feel like for so many people, like I had already exited the evangelical world before that. But I feel like the Trump era was like a huge, you know, again, like another big boost to that kind of like ex-evangelical movement. And I think it's super bewildering to come out from that and be like, what happened? And I'm really thankful for like so many people that are helping us fill in the context. Like I think of Jamar Tisby as like The Color of Compromise. I'm just now listening to Jesus and John Wayne. Mm-hmm. And all of these books, you know, like how did we get here as the church? Because I feel like even though these resources exist, like, I feel like we need to continually, like, keep saying, like, this is how we got here, because we were actually always here. But, like, a vast majority of us were, like, incentivized to turn a blind eye to those things. And then it got to this point where we could no longer do that, because we saw, like, the fruit of injustice, particularly in, I think, 2020 was, like, a huge, I mean, think of, like, the George Floyd, a huge response to that, you know? And so I think for me now being on the other side of all of that, and I would say like, oh gosh, it's 2023. I probably stopped identifying as an evangelical maybe 8 years ago. And then I just had this long season of like, I don't even know like what I am, because I don't know what it means. I mean, because they tell you to be a Christian is to be this one thing.
Right.
And there's nothing else that exists outside of that. So it's either you're this or you're nothing. And so I didn't know what to do with that, because I'm like, I know that it's not nothing for me, like that, you know, it's meaningful to me, but it can't be this way anymore. And it took me that long, even just within the last year, to be like, no, actually, like I am a Christian. That still means something to me. And I now am learning to like figure out on my own terms what that means. And like, you know, we're talking about going back to the Bible and like seeing what we need to see there and the meaning that we need to receive, and not letting that be arbitrated by male authority or a white lens or all of those other things, you know?
Right.
And it's hard. It's super hard because I'm like, none of the Bible was written by, well, maybe Hebrews, we don't know, but none of the Bible was written by a woman. None of the Bible was even written by a man who, like, thought that women mattered, really, probably. And the Bible would be so different if it had been written by women and if women's stories had been told. But, like, we don't, obviously, it is what it is. So what does it mean now to try to figure out a faith based on, like, the life and words of Jesus that is not just, like, completely soaked in patriarchy and misogyny and anti-blackness and go on down the list, you know?
Right. Right. And what's so strange is that, yeah, it's soaked in, but, like, it wasn't, the Bible was not written with anti-blackness in mind. Right. And, like, we are so, we have been given such a faulty lens. Like, this whole, it was written by marginalized people, especially, right? The New Testament. So the part that is ours for us, these were written by this minority, this marginalized group of people to give themselves hope, to help them cope with the world. And, like, the fact that we have all been taught to view this through this empirical lens, this imperial, like, we're looking at this from the top and have so twisted it. I'm like, I don't know that there's any coming back from that. Like,
unless you just, like, completely, I mean, this is insane, but, like, unless you literally just, like, completely skip over, like, all of church history, like, literally, because I've been working forever and I have no idea, like, where this is going, but, like, on this piece about, like, the misogyny exhibited by, like, every single church father, and maybe not anti-blackness, but, like, anti-Semitism, like, anti not white folks, like Martin Luther, you know, like Saint Augustine, who was himself black. But anti-women, for sure. And, like, I've just been gathering these little quotes, these little choice morsels in there with, like, all this theology that we based our entire religion on is, like, these really terribly misogynistic things. And so it's, like, really, really hard to realize, like, at the core, the religion that was built up around these writings was never written with women in mind.
Right.
So, like,
and it should have been written with marginalized people in mind, but somehow it wasn't.
Well, it's like it was written by, I think, it, I mean, it, like you said, it was written by marginalized people, but then, like, pretty much, like, immediately it became co-opted, right, by empire. And then used for political power. And, like, even the way in which, the ways in which, like, the canon, the, you know, the books that we have in the Bible were established, it was all done with an agenda. And so I think once I started reading about that, and there's so much that they don't want you to know, like, the people in that worldview, because it absolutely falls apart if you start to pull one thread, right? And so it has to be, like, all-encompassing and, like, so insulated, because it doesn't work if you step one toe out of line. And I think that's what everyone now is kind of realizing, is, like, oh, it doesn't work. But, like, when I first read about, like, how things were in the early church and how there was, like, no effort to, like, reach consensus. It was actually, the early church was, like, actually defined by kind of like this multiplicity of ideas. And then there was, like, a very organized effort to silence certain streams in favor of, like, a unified story that we were, like, going with. That really set me free because I was like, I have like as much right as anybody else to like just look at a translation of an ancient language saying stuff and trying to like base my life around it as anybody else. And like, church history wasn't made for me. So I can kind of, I don't know, it kind of makes me smile. Like, when I think about it, I'm just kind of like, it feels so just like, I don't know, just like, yay. Like, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. I can just choose. And it feels good, you know, like there's some theories out there that, you know, like in the Gospel of John, there's the beloved disciple and everyone assumes it's John. There are some theories out there that actually Mary Magdalene was the beloved disciple. And like, that was not acceptable to patriarchal culture for her to have, you know, that outsized of a role in Jesus's life and ministry. And so like, you know, through some trickery and translation and blah, 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 that was hidden. And there's so much like that. So that's actually this book that I'm trying to write. It kind of maps the trajectory of like my trauma that I experienced through childbirth, pregnancy, postpartum, infertility, all of these like very female, you know, not wanting to discount like trans women, but you know, biologically, experiences that men don't have. And so like inherently the men who wrote the Bible did not have lived experience of that, but there's so much that women know because of these experiences. And it's complicated because I don't also want to reduce women to like this role. This is just my life experience. But basically in my book, what I'm trying to do is kind of map this trajectory of like, here's all these like very uniquely female experiences that I had zero context for because I grew up in like such a patriarchal worldview. And particularly when it comes to religion, this religion that was supposed to be like everything to me that had like barely anything to say to women. And then kind of going back and picking up these pieces of like, here's everything that was hidden. You know, there's so much there that was hidden either intentionally or just like not emphasized because it wasn't seen as important because it was women's stuff, you know, and how actually learning all of that, it just gives me that little like secret inward smile of like, I don't have to care what they think because that wasn't for me, you know? So I feel like we veered really far from like the Barbie topic, but, you know, on the world being not built for you, which is like with Ken's experience of Barbie Land. So here's how we bring it back.
No, that's all so good. And please, please write your book. Please put it out into the world. Because like take however you can, right? Tap into the confidence of the mediocre white man and do your thing. Because John Eldridge had no business writing any books. And he has a bunch of them.
Oh my gosh, that was one part that I died over. It was like towards the very end when Stacey's like being so self-effacing and she's like, it was so risky for me to co-author this book with my husband, who is this amazing author, and I have no experience at all. And I'm just like, honey, you're good, girl. You got this.
You are just as good as John. Trust me.
Better even, probably. So, yeah. You know, to bring it back to Barbie, like, there's, you know, obviously there's been, like, a lot of talk around Greta Gerwig and, like, how she makes films and the lens in which she's doing stuff. And I saw some comparisons to, like, Little Women, you know, which I loved her version of Little Women. Don't know how it stands up to the, you know, my forever classic with Winona Ryder as Jo, but it did make me think of, and this book actually is, it made me think of this quote too. There's like the monologue, there's like a Jo March monologue where she's like, women have minds and they have souls as well as just hearts. And they've got ambition and they've got talent as well as just beauty. I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. I'm so sick of it. And I saw people kind of comparing like the two, those two monologues, but it's just this idea that like, we're so tired of like people telling us who we should be and then trying to frame it as freedom for us. When if people would just listen to women, we're actually super capable of like saying what it is we want and who we want to be and like what we want, even if we want to put it in Christian terms, like what we feel that God is calling us into, you know?
Right.
We can do that.
Right. Because even if we're going to go along with their shitty theology, right? Like, we're the relationship toggle, right? So who would hear more clearly from God? Like, why would you doubt us? Like, God's going to speak to anyone, and we're going to hear it. It's going to be us.
But like, that's the whole problem. That's the whole problem. That when I first started coming out of that worldview, I felt insanely confused, because I'm like, wait, on the one hand, I've been told my whole life, you can hear from God. Like, you have the same spirit that lives inside of you that Jesus had inside of Jesus. And, you know, Jesus said, like, you will do greater things than even I have. And yet, if I feel that that spirit is calling me to something that is in conflict with your authority, then I am the one who is wrong every single time. So which one is it?
Right.
And it's obviously clear which one it is for them. But I think there's just like this, it just doesn't work. Like when you finally see it, you're just like, okay, yeah, it just doesn't, it's just not realistic.
Right. Right. And for all of these things, right, you have to listen to the people you're trying to tell what to do. Like, you're trying to put people in this box, but like, there's always going to be an issue because you're not asking the people in the box what they want. Like, you're not, and it's just that supremacy culture, and it just washes down over everything. Like, we just had a blow up on Instagram. It's like, you cannot tell, you can't come in and tell marginalized people, a group that you are not a part of, about their experience or what their experience should be. Like, you can't do that. As soon as you do that, whatever your intentions are, like, you're stepping into supremacy. Mm-hmm. And coming
out. You're playing the role of the oppressor. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not to say that we're going to get it all, we're going to have it all right. Like, my experience is not, I can't speak for all women. I can't speak for all Black people. I can't speak for all Black women. Right. But at some point there are consensuses, right? There are, okay, nine of them are saying this and two over here are saying that. We're going to have to go with someone, so let's try what the nine are saying. And if nothing else, like, whoever, whatever group, whether it's men, whether it's white people, whatever it is, had you been doing things perfectly, right, if this was the way, if you had the answers, we wouldn't be here. Like, there would be no issues. And so at some point, you have to give other people the chance to be wrong, even. Like, again, the nine are saying this. We don't know that that's the right answer, but we should try it, because what we've been doing is obviously not working, or we wouldn't be having these conversations.
Exactly. Like, yeah, and with the church, too. I mean, you know, women not being able to hold positions of leadership, and it's like, do you feel like you're doing a great job? Like, right. And how will we know that it wouldn't be better for women to lead if we don't just give it a try?
Give it a try.
Just give it a try. What do you have to lose? You're already losing.
Right.
And you're going to lose yourself to death. That's how I felt for years. And so, yeah, I think for me, you know, now I'm really interested in, first of all, just like making my life a life that I want to live, like that, and not in a selfish way, but just in like a, my life should feel good to me, and I should be able to do the things that I want to do. Right. I do spiritual direction, and I met with my spiritual director yesterday, and we were like just still talking through this issue. Like, even after all this time, I still feel like it's so hard for me to just express a desire or a need without immediately thinking about the implications that that would have for another person. And she was like, what if you could just like, from this pure place, like literally just express something that you want without like any attachment to like anybody else? And I'm like, I literally don't think I have the ability to do that, because it's been so conditioned as a woman to always be thinking about how your actions are going to impact the other people in your life, and like molding yourself around how you can be helpful for others and thoughtful for others and maintain relationships and like all of these roles that we are told are ours. And then we're like, it's like the self-reinforcing cycle of giving us those roles and then training us to play those roles and then being like, well, men can't do it. It's like, yeah, because you never gave men the chance to do it, because you always just told women we were supposed to do it. Right. And now women are saying, you know, to your point, it would actually be great for all of us if we could all do this. Like, what if men could care about their relationships? I mean, it's so funny. I saw this, like, what's his name? Bill Maher, that news guy. Did you see, like, he had some take about the Barbie movie, like some hysteric take about like Zombieland? I don't even know, but he was just basically like, this movie is not relevant to like what's happening today. And I'm just like, okay, Bill, like, you know, like, it's exactly like you said, if women are saying like, hey, and you know, the thing that's so generous about like marginalized people is that like, I see this in like, you know, people of color, I see this in women. It's like always like, hey, if we did this, it could actually be better for everyone. Don't you want that? But it's like you said, the devil that you know, because there's fear in trying something different. Because what if it's harder? What if it's not better for me? What if I have to give something up? So it just feels like this wall, but like, it's so relevant. Like, I don't know who Bill Maher is talking to, but like, he's not talking to me and my friends. Like, my friends and I were literally texting the other day about like one of my friends, her boyfriend, it was his birthday. And they like got this group of people together to go to dinner. And one of her boyfriend's best friends was like, didn't know that it was the guy's birthday. And she's like, we're literally at a birthday party for him. Like, why did you think we were getting together and like going out to dinner? How are you friends with this person? Like, longstanding friends with this person, and you don't know that it's his birthday? Like, but that's how men are conditioned negatively to not value their relationships, because they always have a woman to do that labor for them. And I think we've just accepted that for so long. And now, like, so many more of us are like, nah, we're not accepting that anymore. So like, if you want to be in a relationship with a woman, like, you got to figure it out, like how to be in a relationship. And so many women are like having to teach their husbands, like, actively, this is what it's like to like be in a good relationship.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting.
Yeah. So not to be all Eldridge about it, but in your most important role as a mother, how, like, what does that look like for you as far as patriarchy, as far as white supremacy? Like, you've got some of the most important people in the world on your hands.
I know.
These little white boys.
I'm just going to say right now, I only wanted daughters. I come from a family of all sisters. But yeah, I mean, it feels heavy on all the whole spectrum of like gender, because, you know, raising, I have two sons and a daughter. So it's like raising white men feels so hard. And raising a daughter feels hard. And I am a person that like takes a ton of personal responsibility. Like that's just inherent to me. And so I think I probably overvalue my ability, you know, like I think actually, so I have twins, boy, girl twins, and actually having them feels really freeing. Not that I'm like letting myself off the hook. Of course I have an impact, like a huge impact in their lives. But also I see how you can have two kids exactly the same age, parent them in exactly the same way, even like minor things like how you're feeding them or how you're sleep training them or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, I could do it exactly the same way for these two kids and they're just going to be their own person. So I think, you know, that I think what I try to focus on is, you know, modeling doubt for myself, modeling changing my mind, modeling having hard conversations. I do feel like this responsibility to not shield my kids from things in the way that I feel like so many white parents do, because I recognize that, like, you know, Black parents, for example, have to have this talk early on with their kids about like getting pulled over. And, you know, like I've heard white parents be like, oh, my kids are so young, like they can't handle that. And it's like, but we get a choice. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to use that, you know, like maybe I feel like my kids can't handle it, but like, I'm going to walk them through like what it looks like to try and handle something that is like above your ability to handle it. Because actually God does give us more than we can handle. To quote a Christian maxim, right? God absolutely gives us more than we can handle. Like this entire life is more than we can handle. Like that's why we have trauma and like need therapy and all that. But yeah, I think that's what I try to focus on is, I think like this consciousness raising from a really young age. If I look back on my childhood, now I see so much that I can't believe the adults around me weren't questioning, you know, from like small examples, like when, you know, obviously we're all raised on Disney and like, this is good bringing it back to the Eldridge, empire, like, you know, like, pick a princess movie, you know, like The Little Mermaid was my favorite. And I will say Disney has been paying attention more to the stories that they're telling. And like the new Little Mermaid, I felt like addressed a lot of the problematic things from the one, you know, that we grew up with. But, I never once questioned or had someone question for me, like model questioning, was it really worth it for her to literally give up her voice so that this guy would fall in love with her? Mm. Because now I'm like, that is insane. And I actually loved that about the new Little Mermaid is they added that whole new song where it was her questioning, like, did I make the right choice? Like, should I have done this? And like, kind of like an oh shit moment, like what have I done? And I like really appreciated that they added that in, because, you know, the story is still what it is, but at least they showed like some awareness that like she could have made a different choice and like maybe she should have, you know. Right. So I think for me with my kids, it's not like it's so funny, another Disney example, like growing up, you know, we would watch like Pocahontas, which now I'm like, it's horrifying. And I remember as a kid, one of my best friends had like the storybook from Pocahontas, and her mom went through and like anytime it talked about praying to like the ancestors, she sharpied it and wrote God. And, like, we would always be like, we could still read it, you know, like, hold it up to the light. And I feel like now, in, like, progressive parenting, I feel like we could easily swing the pendulum the other way and be like, we're banning watching Pocahontas in our house. And, like, there are some movies I'm like, no, we will not watch. Peter Pan is one of them. It is literally irredeemable. I don't know if you've watched Disney's Peter Pan lately, but, like, you should do a podcast on that because it is.
Oh, God. I'm just thinking right now, and I'm like, oh, wait.
Horrible. So I won't let my kids watch Peter Pan just because I'm like, it's literally just, like, toxic. But, like, for example, I would let my kids watch Pocahontas because, like, Pocahontas is honestly kind of dope. Like, and there's, you know, like, there's cool things about that movie. But, like, I'm definitely going to raise the conversation of, like, first of all, this entire thing is, like, rooted in fiction, and, like, the actual Pocahontas story is horrific. And here's what actually happened. And also, like, how would you feel if you're just, like, chilling in your house and then all of a sudden these guys with guns came and they were like, this is our house now? Because that's actually what, like, John Smith and those guys did to the indigenous people, you know? So I don't think it's, like, swinging the pendulum of, like, well, we're just going to, like, it's again, going back to, like, we can't pretend like this stuff didn't happen. But I think how we move forward, it's always going to be, like, it transcend and include, right? Like, this is what we didn't know, and this is now what we know, and we have to make that work visible for our kids so that they're starting off at, like, a baseline, more conscious place so that then they can have more of an ability to, like, call that out when they see it, because it's still everywhere, right?
Right.
It's still, like, in our classrooms. You know, it's still in, like, what's being taught. I mean, and if you look at, like, how Florida is literally trying to, like, double down on some of this stuff, you know, like, it's still there. So I think I try to focus on, like, what's just in front of me today, and I do feel stressed out about the future. Like, I want my kids to be, like, good humans in the world who, like, care about others, you know, and all I can control is today, you know?
Yeah. And however it goes, the Eldridges are going to blame you again.
They will. The women are always blamed, so.
Always. Always. Again, Hitler's mom, all responsibility. Because
what did she do to him?
What did she do? What didn't she do? Something. Something, but it was,
I actually
definitely
know nothing about Hitler's mom. Is there a book about her? Like, what's her deal? I'm actually curious now.
That's a good question.
Jesus is extending his hand to you. He is inviting you to dance with him. He asks, may I have this dance every day of your life? His gaze is fixed on you. He is captivated by your beauty. He is smiling. He cares nothing of the opinion of others. He is standing. He will lead. He waits for your response. My lover spoke and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come with me. Song 210.
Everything is permissible. Can't stop anyone from writing a bad book. But not everything is beneficial. So on a scale of harmful, permissible but harmful, 1 up to 10, beneficial for everyone, yay, book could not be better. Where would you place Captivating?
This is a really hard question. I mean, is it the worst thing ever? No. Is it helpful in any way? No. I'll say 3.
All right.
I've heard worse.
I've heard worse. That could be the tagline for evangelicalism, honestly.
They're at least trying to, like, make it seem like they like women. You know, like, it's like a couple points for effort.
And
I mean, at least he let his wife co-write it with him. That's something.
Oh my God. He just wanted to write a book for women and slapped her name on it. Yeah, but yeah, sure.
The part at
sure.
the very end where she talked about, she talked about how, like, when she started speaking at women's retreats and she was overweight and she was so ashamed because she wasn't living up to the standard of beauty.
No, because I was severely overweight and struggle here still. My sin, my addiction was plain for all to see. Yikes.
So, yikes. Okay, maybe we'd go to two. Maybe we put it on a two on a scale. You just lost a point for that, Stacey.
Just for that. Yeah. All right. Same scale. Barbie movie.
I will say 7. Like, it's not the first movie that I would recommend to someone if they're wanting to learn about feminism, but it was solid effort and it was fun. It was, you know, complex enough while holding space for, like, the complexity of the fact that it was funded by Mattel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It did some good work. I really appreciated the Ruth as God character.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice creation narrative. And
yeah,
a nice viewpoint of the creator.
Yeah, I wrote a piece. If people want to go read it on my website, I kind of like wrote more in depth about how I was seeing Ruth as this creator, and then kind of comparing, contrasting that with God in Genesis 1-3. So if people want to read my theological meanderings, it's there for them. But I was down with it. I was like, this is a much more feminist version of God that I like.
If we're going to recommend anything between these two things, Barbie movie, not captivating. And instead of captivating, what is something women constructed and or focused that you would heartily recommend?
Yes. Well, I was ready with this one. So I have this book called Someone Other Than a Mother by Erin Lane. And it's a pretty recent book. I think it might have come out last year. But when I got this book, or maybe 2021, but when I got this book, I like literally was like, thank God someone wrote this book. It's 2022. So the subtitle is Flipping the Scripts on a Woman's Purpose and Making Meaning Beyond Motherhood. And Erin grew up Catholic, but she's like, you know, evangelical adjacent. And she deconstructs, I think, like 7 or 8 kind of cultural scripts that are given to women, and then kind of tries to rewrite ones that would be healthier and more inclusive. She talks a lot about, she has adopted children, but before that, she always thought that she would be like child-free by choice. And so really grappled with this like put on identity for women that like your highest calling is being a mother. And so she grapples a ton and provides a ton of space for, you know, people who are child-free by choice, people who are not able to have children biologically, and then, you know, biological mothers, adopted parents. Like, it's, I really recommend it. So it's Someone Other Than a Mother. It's like a really, I think, freeing book. So, yeah.
Excellent. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for saying yes. And again, taking on the Eldridges. That is no no small ask and no small feat. So thank you.
Yep, it was fun. It was great.
And that's that. Thank you for dropping in on the Bad Book Club. I certainly hope you had a better time listening than we did reading. Bad Words is an Irreverent Media podcast, a Legata Scratch production, and a God Is Not Given side hustle. Produced by Janice Legata and made possible by the generous support of Jodly and Jodwilling patrons like
Beth. Thank you, Beth.
If you're enjoying this season, please let the people know by leaving a rating or a review on the podcast platform of your choice. And if you're looking for a better book experience, ask Amazon about The Grift of God and or The Divide by me, Janice Legata. And until we meet again, take care of you and be well. This has been an episode of Bad Words, but to finish up, here are some good ones.
I really enjoyed this conversation as someone who thinks about these things all the time. always down to chat about, especially roles for women, just because that was so damaging in my own life. And you know, I felt like I had to break myself all the way down to figure out who I actually was and what I actually wanted. And by that point, I had already made all of these choices, you know, to build this life, you know, of getting married and having kids. And so I think if there's anything that I want, like if I think about my daughter and for my kids, you know, my boys too, it's to raise them with a sense that they're like just more of an imagination for their lives in all ways, and a space for others in the same way, you know, whether that comes to gender or career or faith. That's really my best hope for my kids, is that they grow up knowing who they are outside of like anything that's put on them. And yeah, I think in doing that work, in liberating yourself, you're liberating other people too. So